All right, so we are on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph 21a. I think we sort of got towards the bottom, but let's just move a couple of lines back up. We'll go back to Ikka de Omri, a different way of viewing this machloket. Right, is that what we're up to?
Yeah.
I think so. We're up to Ikka de Omri, it's about 8 lines from the bottom. To remind ourselves, again, we're now back in the Mishnah. This is like the very last part we're dealing with this Mishnah, where the Mishnah was... We're talking about Shane damages. Yes, this is working. We're talking about Shane damages. An animal eats fruit, and it was distinguishing between, in some cases, you are Meshalem es Masha Nehenes, which actually, I think I was getting a little bit confused last time, but Meshalem es Masha Nehenes, almost interchangeably in the Gemara, is referred to as potter, right? So although you're paying something, you're effectively exempt, right? The fact that you're paying what the animal was benefited, it's like a small amount, it's a nominal amount. You're basically, you give over what you would have been paying to feed your animal for lunch anyway, you know, effectively. That's the, which is almost used, as I say, interchangeably with potter, as we'll see in the Gemara. So in some cases you pay Masha Nehenes, what it benefited, but then in other cases you pay Meshalemes Masha Hezika, right, what it damaged, i.e. if it ate, I don't know, golden strawberries, then it, then you pay back gold, strawberries with gold leaf on them or something, you know, there's pay a lot. Nice juicy mangoes or whatever it is, some nice imported thing, which is very expensive, then you end up paying for the full amount. And the Gemara distinguished, sorry, the Mishnah had distinguished it pointed out the Rishus HaRabim, but then it's the Rishus HaRabim, you're generally going to be exempt, but then it says, Vim Nenes Mashalemes Mashanenes, Kate said, you don't need to follow it inside it. If you ate from mitoch harachava, from the main thoroughfare, then you pay what you benefited. But mitzidei harachava, from the sides, then you do pay the full amount. And we're going to talk about that. We talked about that a little bit, but I think that's where we're continuing from, basically, this distinction. And mechazeres, turning head, which is the key part over here. And again, the Mishnah also suggested that mipesach achanas, from the entrance to the shop, then you pay from the you pay only what you benefited. But mitoch achanas, from within the shop itself, then that's obviously reshut ha nizak, the damaged person's property, and therefore you pay the full amount. Okay, so we tried to explain it one way. Tried to explain the Mishnah. We had this whole thing about mechazeres, where the animal turns its head. That was the sort of first part. Now we'll try and do. We're continuing along that theme. Ikka de Omri. So some suggest as follows. Maybe we can reinterpret as follows. Mechazeres. Everybody agrees that when it turns its head, dechayeves, right? We're talking about within the Rosh Hashanah, right? Edge, right? Dechayeves, it's going to pay, i.e. full, right? Meshalemes Masha Hezika. Ki pligi, what are we talking about? Bemaktze mokom. Again, we started this last time, but just helpful to start from this point, for me at least. So what you have is, if you look at the deed, your property goes up until here, right, this line. But actually you've put your fence 5 feet back from that, or whatever it is. Yeah, you've decided your fence is going to go a little bit further back. So technically, those last 5 feet, your fence goes up until here, or the front of your shop, or your house, or whatever it is, your wall goes up until this point. But technically your property continues for another 5 feet. So now you've laid out your fruit over here, you've put your fruit in that front 5 feet. It's in front of the wall. Right, so it's not obviously part of inside your property, but it is technically inside your property. So that's what we're discussing. But Maktim Okim Rusha, so Lurusha, so Rabin, but Hochi.
It's your property. You see in the high street nowadays, people just spill out onto the public property.
Aren't there rules for that?
There should be, but they're clearly being ignored left, right, and
center. When restaurants put out tables in front and things like that.
And sort of panel shops put out their buckets and spades and all the rest of the stuff.
Right. I don't know, maybe they are. I'm not sure.
I'm suggesting.
Oh, yeah? I don't know.
They need
an enforcer.
Yeah. So we're assuming this, then, that really is genuinely those walls.
Yeah, in this particular case, yeah, we're dealing with the case. This is dealing with the case where, correct, where you have intentionally moved your property back. Again, nowadays the challenge is very difficult to do that. Maybe that's also part of the problem. You know, if they could move their wall 2 feet backwards, maybe they would. But that's already a whole big business to do that. Difficult to do that. Yeah. Okay. So, exactly. So this is dealing with the case where it definitely is your property, but it's not obviously so, right? It's not obviously so. And therefore, so what happens? So the animal walks through and eats a little bit of the food. So what happens? So v'hochi itmar omer Rav loishna ela mechazeres. This is exactly what we're talking about. The Rav says only b'mechazeres. One second, let's just find something here. Right, so Rav says that when it's mechazeres, then you're going to be liable. Right, we had this machlokes Rav and Shmuel. So Rav said you're going to be liable. Are you going to pay full damages? Shmuel said you p'tura. So that was what we pointed out earlier, right? That was the machlokes we had last time. And now we're continuing in that vein. We're saying, Rav, Rav has explained as follows. The reason why you're paying full damages is because Elam Chazeres, i.e. even in this Makze Mokom scenario, even where talking about the fact that it is your private property, but even then we're only talking about where the animal is turning its head or something along those lines. Aval Makze Mokom Mirushusa Lirushusa Rabim. Oh, excuse me. Sorry. Rav is saying mechazeres, when the Mishnah said mechazeres, turning its head, that's the only part where you're going to be liable. But if you do this makte mokom, then you move your wall back, then it's going to be ptura. Even Rav would agree that you're going to be exempt. And therefore, what we're trying to suggest, I think, is that basically this machlokes Rav and Shmuel fits in... We're almost trying to sort of attribute different opinions to our Mishnah. So, Petura, you're going to be exempt. Shmuel says, Afina makte makam rishuso li rishuso rabim chayeves. Right? Shmuel says, even if you do that, then you're still going to be this person's still going to be liable to pay. I.e., the fact that you've moved your wall back doesn't make a difference. It's still considered your private property, and just like the animal eating from private property is always going to be liable to pay full damages, to pay what you mishalemus masher hizika, what was damaged. So too, over here, even if you've moved your wall back. So lema, and this is where I think we left off last time, where we didn't quite finish it off. So that's why we're starting again. Lema. Let's suggest that this debate between Rav and Shmuel actually matches up to a different debate that we have elsewhere. We're talking about a pit in your own property. What exactly does that mean? Rav de Omar Potter. Oh no. So let's spell out the case first, okay? So is the case was as follows. Where you dig a pit in your own field, and then what you do is you declare the rest of the field around this pit to be hefker, right? You make it into public property. You say, actually, this field that I have, this whole big field, but actually I only want this tiny little bit, right, with the pit in it. So usually, a bor birushuso, a pit in your own private property you're exempt for, right? Somebody's walking through your private property, they have to look out, right? You can dig whatever pits you want anywhere in your private property. If you have a bor birushuso rabim, if you do it in the public domain, then you're going to be liable. So over here, what have you done? Over here, you've dug it in your private property, but you've actually made all the property around it, all the surrounding area, public property. So this is the debate between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says you're exempt, and Shmuel says you're liable, right? If somebody falls into that pit and something happens to them, then Rav would say you're exempt because it's on your private property, right? You still own that little square or that little piece of land where the pit is. Whereas Shmuel says, no, you're liable because now that you have made it public all the way around, then people can't, you know, well we'll see some of the logic as we go through it. But what our Gemara is trying to do now is match up the two Rav and Shmuel's, right? Match up the two. Or not, Oh, sorry, I've gotten the wrong way around. Sorry, the other one is not obviously Rav and Shmuel, but what the Gemara tries to do is suggest that we can fit it in to this Rav and Shmuel debate as follows. Rav de Omar Potter. Rav over here says, again, in both cases we're effectively dealing with, the similarity is that we're dealing with private property, which is not obviously private. That's maybe how I would phrase it. Over here, one case, the shopkeeper has moved their fence back so that the front of their property is technically their property, but doesn't look so, right? And in the other case, the person has made all the surrounding area public domain, but kept this one little piece in the middle. So that little piece in the middle is not so obvious to everybody, right? They don't necessarily realize that little piece is the private piece. So that, I think that's why the Gemara's, that's the connection that Gemara's making over here. So Rav de Omar Potter, maybe Rav in our case said you're exempt, i.e. an animal who eats fruit from this private property that was actually in front of the shopkeeper's fence or in front of their wall, then you're going to be exempt. You're only going to have to pay what the animal benefited. Maybe Kosovar Bober Shuso Chayiv. He would say the opposite in the case of the bor, in the case of the pit. He would make you liable. Why? Because Rav, again, that the thread all the way through would be that Rav is basically saying, if you're making it unclear, right, then you're going to have to deal with that, right? If it's unclear where your property begins and where your property ends, particularly in these sorts of cases, right, then you're going to have to deal with that. And therefore, somebody who's walking through a public domain and happens to stray over your small area with a pit in it and gets damaged, you're going to have to pay them. And over here, if the animal walking past has nibbles some of the fruit that's in front of your fence, then again, that, you know, you're going to lose out as a result of that. That's Rav's thread, or that's the suggestion the Gemara is making, that Rav would be consistent in that regard. Or Shmuel de Omar Chayiv, and Shmuel, who said that you're liable in the case of the fruit in front of the shop. Kosovar Shabur Birshuso Potter. He seems to say, Kosovar Bur Birshuso Potter. Maybe he would say that in the case of the pit, you'd be exempt, right? Why? Because again, it's still private. It's still private property, and therefore, in a sense, the onus is on the person to be a little bit careful. Private property is private property. So the Gemara says, no, maybe it doesn't work out as well. You know, it sounds nice, but actually you don't need to force Rav and Shmuel into these sort of consistent positions. They can distinguish. You can distinguish between the two. Omelecho Rav. Rav could distinguish as follows. He could say, La'olam emelecho, we're turning over. La'olam emelecho be'almo bur birshuso potter. He would say, no, even though I usually hold that this sort of bur birshuso is exempt, right? I actually agree that you would be exempt if you were in the case of the pit. But over here, I disagree. Why? I still hold you're exempt over here, right? You would have thought that if I hold that the pit is exempt, that over here I would be exempt as well. No. V'shayniyoch, it's different over here. Why? Da Omar lav kol kaminach dimekorvas lehu leperosoch. Right? Basically, what is the... You have no right to be eating these fruits, in a sense, right? Even though, no, it's the other way around. Rav is the one who says Potter or Chayev. Rav is the one who says you're exempt from eating the fruits.
Yeah, he's more absolute about public domain. Haven't you got to be focusing? In the case of the pit,
yes,
you're focusing on the owner of the pit,
right?
Whether they have to pay somebody that paid them. In the case of the shop, right? If you've got to focus now on the owner of the shop.
Exactly.
If the
owner of the shop.
No, because if the person whose animal ate,
yes,
and only had to pay the nominal value, then the owner of the shop loses out.
Yes, exactly.
So when it says. When it says Potter regarding the animal, is it?
Yes.
Then you've got to turn it around to say whether it's the owner who's benefiting, or, you know, who's
the owner who's losing out. Correct. In the case of Potter,
the owner of the pit.
In the case of Potter, the owner is losing out.
Yes.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so correct. That's what.
Consistent
correct.
With a pit.
Exactly. That's what. Yeah. Okay. That's a nice way of phrasing it. Right. So Rav and Shmuel, basically, the suggestion of the Gemara is that Rav and Shmuel's consistency is that they're either backing or not backing the owner of the pit or the owner of the shop. Right. Okay. So that's true. But now we're flipping. Not flipping it. We're trying to draw a line between the two. Right. We're saying they don't necessarily match up perfectly. Rav could still say that the owner of the pit is okay. The owner of the pit does not lose out, but the owner of the shop still loses out. You're going to be potter in both cases. The fellow who falls into the pit, the owner of the pit is not going to be liable to pay the damages. Yet when the animal eats the fruit, the owner of the animal is not going to be required to pay back full damages either. Right? Why? Because the owner of the Because again, coming back to this phrase, "Lav kol kaminach demerkaris lahu lepirasech," right? He says, I've stopped in the middle of the phrase. Basically, the owner of the animal is responding. He's saying, "Lav kol kaminach demerkaris lahu lepirasech." You've moved your fruits to where lirushas arabim mechayev lahu letoroi, right? It's basically you've put them so close, you've made it so available, it's so easy for the animal to come and eat from them, and therefore you're saying, you know, and that's basically why Rav says that you would be exempt. I mean, they're not exactly the same sort of case. And again, the flip side, Shmuel Omar, Shmuel could say as follows: Ba'almo bar birshoso chayev. He believes that you would be liable. In the case of the pit, the owner should have either made the whole thing hefker, in which case he for sure would have been liable, or he should have been a bit more careful, whatever it might have been. The point is, you would be liable, even though it's on your private property, just because it's that tiny, small area, that's not enough. Debishlamo bur ikalamim alavadaite, right? With regards to the pit, you could say, I didn't know. Right, and that's why you're liable. Erla Peiros Mikalamimar Lavadaita. You can't say I didn't know. You can see them. Right? When a person's walking across, you're walking along a field, you know that this field is public property. So you can't see the pit. The pit is not that obvious to see, right? That's the problem, is you just don't know it's coming. Whereas the fruits over here, you might say it's difficult to control the animals, a challenge, but you can see them, right? They're there on display, pretty open and pretty clear. So therefore, again, so Shmuel is saying that they're not exactly the same thing. So again, Shmuel, maybe it's just me. Shmuel, the distinction that we're drawing for Shmuel, I can understand. The distinction that we're drawing for Rav, it still seems a little bit, I don't know, I'm struggling to define it as well. Because again, basically what we are presenting the case on behalf of the owner of the animal and saying that, you know, if this person puts their fruits out, then in a sense it's tempting the animal and therefore you're going to be exempt. I don't know. I guess that's it. I guess the point is it's like a little bit of a temptation. Is that the distinction? I'm struggling, maybe it's just me in my mind, struggling a little bit to define the difference that the Gemara is suggesting on behalf of Rav, but definitely we can see a difference between the two. The point is that I think it doesn't need to be such a strong distinction. All we're pointing out here in the Gemara is that you cannot force Rav and Shmuel to accept. We cannot say for sure that Rav and Shmuel. You know, are consistent in both. Yeah, exactly. We take exactly. Correct. That they wouldn't necessarily take those exact positions. So with Shmuel, I think it's pretty clear. Again, for maybe it's just for me. Shmuel, the distinction's pretty obvious. The way the Gemara pointed it out, the fact that in one case it's visible and in one case it's not visible, right? And therefore, you don't necessarily need to match them up. Right, when the animal's walking along, the owner can see the fruits, so therefore you've got to be a little bit more careful. Whereas with the pit, it's not always so obvious, so therefore you know, you sort of understand potentially why you'd be liable in both cases. But with Rav, the distinction seems to be, yeah, why have you put out this these fruits so close to the Rosh Hashanah? Basically, as I say, it almost sounds like a temptation to me. That's what it. Let me see if any notes here explain it further. After Rav Barbara Shusa Potter, okay, no, I don't see anything obvious. All right, I think it's enough of a distinction. Rav says basically that the animal, or that the fruits shouldn't have been there, and the fact they were, you know, you're going to be exempt according to Rav, and yet you could still be exempt in the case of the pit. Shmuel, again, the bottom line is we don't have an obvious connection between these two. Okay, between these two. Fine. Lema. Okay, we're going to make another attempt to find connections between this debate of Rav and Shmuel, I think. Okay, let's lema mechazeres. Sorry, not between Rav and Shmuel. Lema mechazeres tonoihi. That we had attempted to connect mechazeres to the debate between Rav and Shmuel. Now let's say Rav and Shmuel had the debate about mechazeres. Let's suggest that actually Rav and Shmuel are amoraim. Okay, this is a gemara. This is a debate post Mishnaic debate, right? But the Gemara wants to, and this is a common thing the Gemara does, it suggests that maybe actually Rav and Shmuel are simply rehashing an old debate, right? I.e., we already have a separate Machlokes Tanoim on a similar issue, and maybe they're just rehashing the same thing. I.e., the sort of thread of logic is the same thread. So Lema Mechazeres Tanoi here. This debate about Mechazeres is already a Machlokes Tanoim elsewhere. How? Where do we see that? Detanyo. Because we have the following brisa. Ochla mitoch harchava meshalemes mashanenes. If the animal ate from the middle of the road, right? Well, this is our Mishnah already. Detani, they say it's a brisa, but obviously that line is very simple. It's the same as our Mishnah. But there's going to be presumably slight differences, which is why this is a brisa. Ochla mitoch harchava, if it's from the middle of the road, meshalemes mashanenes, then you pay only what you benefited, i.e. there's an exemption. Okay, mitzidei harachava, if it's from the sides of the road, meshalemes mashezika, you pay the full amount, exactly what you damaged. Divrei Rabbi Meir v'Rabbi Yehuda, those are the words of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosi v'Rabbi Lezer, omrim, ein darko le'achol. So this is the difference, right? In our Mishnah, this was presented as just one, you know, there was no debate. Over here, we seem to have a debate. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda seem to side with what our Mishnah presented. Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Lezer, Omrim, Ein Darko Le'echol Elo Lahalich. This is very unclear what that line means, but they obviously seem to be debating Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. The literal translation is Ein Darko Le'echol Elo Lahalich. The normal thing is that it's not attempting to eat, or it's not its normal way to eat. Its normal way is to walk, and the eating is almost like a sideshow, right? So unclear exactly what that means, but basically, I think at the moment, let's see if Rashi spells this out, or if we just need to say it ourselves. Where is the Rashi on this? No, I don't think there is a Rashi on this. Okay, fine. So basically, what I think they're suggesting over here is that Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Lezer are talking about where it's eating from the side of the road, and since it's not usual to do that, right? That is the I don't want to go so far as to say it's a Karen, but it almost makes it sound like it's a okay, I'm not even going to go down that road. I don't think that's what it's saying. But the point is, Ein Darko Le'echol Elo Lahalich is that to eat from the sides is a little bit unusual, right? It's different. The point is, it should be walking normally, and that's the second opinion. We'll flesh it out as we go through and try and sort of match it up with different elements. It's going to become clearer, I think, as we go through what exactly they mean by Ein Darko Le'echol Elo Lahalich. What exactly is going on over here? So Rabbi Yosi Hainu Tana Kama. So Rabbi Yosi, we say, isn't that the same thing, right? Elo mechazeres ikabeinayhu. I mean, basically, I think the Gemara's question is exactly the same thing as as what we're struggling with, right? They don't seem to be a different. They don't seem to have a difference. These two opinions. They seem to be saying the same thing. Let's suggest that mechazeres is the distinction, which is why we, which is what we're trying to prove here. That maybe this whole discussion of mechazeres, the animal turning its head, is a machlokas tanoim. Maybe it's this machlokas of this brisa between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda on the one side, and Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Lezer on the other side. Why? How does that help us explain it? Tana Kama, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, the first opinion, the earlier opinion in the Mishnah, or in the Brisa, I should say, Sovar Mechazeres Nami Meshalem Mashanenes. Even if the animal turns its head, you would still pay Mashanenes, i.e., it is in the when it's walking through the middle of the road. Rabbi Yosi Sovar Meshalem Mashanenes. Rabbi Yosi might say, no, that actually when the animal is walking along in the middle of the road and it turns its head, that you would pay full damages. You would pay Meshalemes Masha Hezika. Because again, Ein Darka Leachol Lahalech. It should just be walking, it shouldn't be eating. It's normal to walk, it's not normal to eat.
But aren't we then disregarding the whole discussion about whether it's a narrow entrance way or wide?
That was earlier.
I know, but we seem to be ignoring that now. As we're saying, it's normal for an animal just to walk. It would be perhaps in a wide open anyway, if it's a very constricted space.
Well, the you're talking about where we that was when we were defining Tzidei Rosh Hasharab, and we had a
yeah, but you're still talking about turning.
Oh no, Karen Zov. You're talking about Karen Zov. Again, whenever we have, we always want to minimize the amount of. Of what we call akimtas, you know, like the number of extra circumstances that we need to put into place. So when we're not defining whether we're talking about narrow or wide, I'm assuming that we're talking about both, unless it's particularly narrow. But presumably, we're talking about a normal case, exactly, right? The standard case.
Less specified.
You see what I mean? Right. I don't know how wide or how narrow, but the point is it's normal enough for it for there to be, well, number one, there is obviously a rechava.
That defies the logic of the Gemara then, doesn't it? Because if you're saying it's a different case, full stop, different case. I mean, we've gone from one thing about turning of head in a restricted area or in the...
No, turning of head was not in a restricting area. Turning of head is not specifically in a restricted area.
Well, I thought the whole previous discussion we had, the illustrations we had, was how it was positioned within...
I don't think it was talking about within a restricted area. Mechazeres, I think, was talking about in any area. As I said, I don't think it was defining it only. Yeah, Mechazeres. The point of Mechazeres, I think, is to what extent the animal. Okay, let's go back and again, the Mishnah had said that if you're in the middle of the road, you don't pay that much. If you're on the side of the road, then you pay a little bit. Or if it seems to be on the side of the road, Rav and Shmuel had this debate about mechazeres, about the animal turning its head, or whether it's walking, whether it's sort of walking all the way there. In a sense, Shmuel said only when it's walking all the way there are you. Only when it's walking. Sorry, the other way around. Rav is saying only when it's walking all the way there are we talking about liability. Whereas mechazeres turning its head, right, it's still going to be exempt. Shmuel had disagreed. Right, Shmuel had disagreed. So what we've basically done, and again, that doesn't seem to make it. Yeah, I don't know if it's narrow or wide or what. It seems to be talking about, I don't know, a normal sized road, and the animal is. It's obviously close enough that it can turn its head, but it's not significantly deviating from its path. I think is the point of Mechazeres, right? The point of Mechazeres. So again, now we're trying to fit this machlokas of Mechazeres into a Mishnah. What did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah had an opinion at the beginning that very much sounded like our Mishnah. The first opinion was, if it's from the middle of the road, then you only pay this small amount. If it's from the sides of the road, Mitzidei Arachava, then you're going to pay the full amount. Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Eliezer had this cryptic statement of Ein Darka Leachol Ela Lahalech. It's not its way to eat. It's only its way to walk. Right? It's natural for it to walk. And the Gemara had attempted to explain that the distinction between these two is with mechazeres, i.e., if you, so again, my understanding was that we're talking about in the middle of the road. Yeah, exactly. So if it's standing in the middle, if it's walking in the middle of the road and it turns its head, then according to Rabbi Yossi, so according to Rabbi Meir, right, you would still be paying Mishalem is Mashanenes, even if it's turned its head. But according to Rabbi Yossi, Mishalem is Mashaziko, you would actually be paying a larger amount. Okay, you'd be paying a larger amount. The fact that it turns its head, because again, it's sort of expected to keep walking as normal. The fact that it turns its head would be enough to make it liable. Ein darka lecho ela lahalich. It's the expectation is that it should keep walking rather than beginning to eat, and the fact that it chose to eat is what makes it liable, fully liable. Okay, b'shalem is mashe ezik. That was our suggestion. The Gemara is attempting to match up this machlokas otherwise. So what we go, if we're not going to match it up, maybe we should make this clear. If we're not going to match it up, what we have to do now is reinterpret this cryptic line of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Eliezer. Right, we're not going to be able to distinguish over here. In logic, we can't just say there's a distinction between the two because we don't understand what Rabbi Yossi is saying otherwise, right? This is our only way at the moment of understanding what Rabbi Yossi is saying. So therefore, that's how the Gemara continues. Lo, that's not what the debate is between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Eliezer on one side and Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda on the other side. What is the debate then? De kulei alma mechazeres. Everybody agrees that mechazeres works. Ika Ravi Kashmuel. Basically, it doesn't matter, right? You can match it up in any which way you want. V'hocha. This is what we're talking about. Maybe they are debating the Tanoim in this mission are debating in the verse itself, meaning. Bevier bisdei acher kamifligi. They're trying to figure out what exactly this phrase means. Now let's remind ourselves. Uvier bisdei acher is the words of the pasuk where we learn shein and regel from. Okay, there's in Parshas Mishpatim. Let's see if we have the exact. Yeah. Okay. Chof beis dalet this Shmos chapter 22 verse 4. I have the full verse here over here. Ki yaver ish sadeh ukerem v'shilach es beiru uvir b'snei acher meitav sadeh meitav karmi yishalim. Okay, so it sends something, i.e., in this case, it's an animal. The animal is walking, the animal is going, and causes trouble. Let's say uvir b'snei acher, some sort of damage occurs in another field, and the Gemara uses this phrase many times to try and derive all sorts of elements of Shein and Regel, but over here they're suggesting that we've gone back to the root. Maybe the debate in this Brisa is surrounding the words of the Pasuk as follows. Bevir b'sdei acher kom miflegi. Mar sovar, one opinion, the opinion of Rabbi Meir, the first opinion in the Brisa is uvir b'sdei acher v'lo b'rishus harabim. It's a very startling suggestion of the Gemara, I think. Uvir is not the first one, the second one. That Rabbi Meir is interpreting the pasuk as referring to sadeh acher. What does sadeh acher mean? Another field. Something else. Below Rishus Rabbim. That's excluding the Rishus Rabbim, excluding the public domain. And therefore, if it's in the public domain, you're going to be exempt. If it's in the private domain, then that's when you're liable, as we've seen all the way through. That's what we know. But Umar Sovar, Rabbi Yossi, the second opinion, maybe takes it further. He says, Uvier iste acher, velo birshus amazik. That actually the pasuk is saying is only excluding, right, when it's talking about an exemption, it's only excluding the damager, Zrushus, i.e., if my animal eats your food in my field, right, then that's when I'm exempt. But anywhere else, I would be liable. That's very surprising. Well, I mean, the Gemara spells it out. What do you mean? Birshus amazik? Lema Piroch Birshosi my body. All you have to say, you don't need a pasuk to tell you that, you don't need a verse to explicitly exclude that. That's logic, it's obvious, right? If your fruits are in my field, then of course my animal's gonna eat them. What are your fruits doing in my field? Why did you put them there? If you bring a nice big box of cherries and sit them in my field, then my animals are going to end up eating them. That's how it goes, right? It doesn't. You don't need a pasuk to exclude that. So, but that's the that had been the one of the, that was the suggestion of the Gemara that maybe that's the debate. So Ella, and now it's again third attempt. To try and explain what this debate of the Tanaim is in this Mishnah and this Brisa. Ella de Ilfa Verab Oshia Ika Beinaihu. No, the debate is between what we also talked about this, I think, quite a while ago. They're debating the case of Ilfa and Rab Oshia. Where is it actually? Let's just go back and double check. Chof Amud Aleph. Don't need to read it all inside. Let me just remind myself. Chof Amud Aleph, we had had this. We had had a couple of cases of Ilfa and Rab Oshia as follows. That they basically had said, So this was towards the top of Chof Amud Aleph, where an animal had climbed on to. You know, we talked about the animal sort of like jumping onto the counter or something like that. You know, in order to eat, or climbed onto the animal in front. Right, it was the one animal was carrying fruit on its back, and the other one had climbed on top of it in order to eat it. So there, that's what they're debating, right? When Rabbi Yossi, when the second opinion had said "Ein darak lechel ela lahalech," what it was talking about is just saying, no, you know, "Ein darak lechel ela lahalech." Is normal to eat, but not normal to walk, but not to eat, right? And therefore, even if you had not, Ilfa and Rabbi Ocha had this. The discussion was, you know, how significant of a movement does it have to be in order to be exempt, or in order to be liable, rather? Sorry. Let's say the animal had climbed on top of the other one's back, and So Rabbi Oshia, for example, they're different cases, but Rabbi Oshia, for example, had suggested as follows. Rabbi Oshia had said, if you have one animal walking in the public domain and the other one jumps on top and eats, then you're liable. They're liable. The owner is liable. Usually we say in the public domain, you're exempt for shein. Why had you been liable? Maybe because of keren, right? Maybe because it's considered to be intentional damage, or maybe something else. But the point is, it's definitely a strange, unusual thing to do, and therefore you're going to be liable. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that maybe Rabbi Meir would disagree. Rabbi Meir, the first opinion over here, would say, no, you're still going to be exempt in that case. And Rabbi Yossi, when Rabbi Yossi is saying, Ein darka lechel el halich, is siding with Ilfa and Rabbi Oshia. Ilfa was a different case. Ilfa was talking about where you have an animal which had... it's a similar type of case, basically. It sort of stretched out its neck to go and eat from something that was sitting on top of a different animal. The other one was where it jumped on top. Either way, Ilfa and Rabbi Oshia, the Gemara is suggesting Rabbi Yossi is siding with them. And since he's siding with them, that is what he means. The first opinion of Rabbi Meir is that you would still be exempt. Anything that's happening, or at least Meshalem es Masha Nenes, you're only going to be paying what you're benefiting from. And in either... The entire point of this Gemara was really just to first suggest and then knock down the fact that Rav and Shmuel Mechazeres, the animal turning its head, was actually a Machlokas Tana, was actually an earlier debate in this Brisa, and we've pointed out that this Brisa really would have a different explanation. That's not really the debate between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir. Okay, difficult to follow the thread. I'll try and sum it up one more time. At least I'm not going to go through all the details of it, but just to sort of explain the flow of the Gemara, we had this machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Okay, we tried to have two different explanations for what exactly the debate was, right? These two Ikka de Omris, which we went through, the suggestions. We had two different ways to sort of to pass this debate. Then we wanted to suggest that actually the debate between Rav and Shmuel might have been already a Tanaitic debate, right? This might match up with the machlokes between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir. And in order to disprove that, the Gemara went through two other ways to explain the machlokes between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir, and in the end, seems to conclude that it's not, that it is different, right? That Rav and Shmuel, the debate about Mechazeres is one thing, the machlokes between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir is a different thing. Bottom line is that we do have this debate between Rav and Shmuel, but we don't have... But it doesn't match up to anything earlier. And again, in doing all of this, we did match up Rabbi Yossi, this Tana, with Ilfa and Rabbi Oshia from earlier opinions. And again, so that was also a little bit helpful to do. And we sort of give a little bit of credence. We sort of connect them back to all of those debates. In terms of bottom line over here, I wonder if we're passing like Rav or Shmuel. Let's just double check. See, we usually pass in halacha ke. I would say Shmuel is usually, yeah, okay, Shmuel, I would think, yeah. Okay, so Shmuel, I would think, is probably how we pass in, just in terms of how we usually go. So again, Shmuel was the one who was more, I don't know if you call it lenient in this case. But he was the one who seemed to exempt in the case of Mechazeres, whereas Rav would say liable, right? In the case of Bor, we didn't have a clear debate, but that wasn't really the topic of our Gemara, because again, we tried to match it up to Rav and Shmuel, and it didn't match up to Rav and Shmuel, so that's a Gemara elsewhere, which we'll have to come across when we do. And in terms of this Machlokes Tanoim, I would again suggest that the first opinion is the one that we would follow, because that is the one that seems to appear in our Mishnah. Right? That was the one that seems to appear in our Mishnah. The Tanakama, Reb Meir, Reb Yehuda, the opinion that said that in the middle of the road you're going to be paying only what you benefit, whereas the one that's Betzidei HaRachova, then you're going to be paying full damages. You're going to be paying Masha Hezika, everything that the animal damaged. Okay, so actually, I don't know what, maybe it's just me, but I've found it's a surprisingly difficult Gemara to follow. Okay, but that really concludes our topic of Shein, right? The next mission deals with Rega. Okay, we've had a little bit of Rega before, but that certainly is... ends our discussion of Shein for the moment. Okay, next mission goes back to dealing with Regel now. We're ready to move on. Any other questions, thoughts? Okay, so let's see. I'm not sure how far we'll get with this, but let's start off at least with the Mishnah, and see where we go to. Hakelev v'hagdi, then a dog or a goat. Shekoftzu mirishus hagag. Sorry, mirosh hagag. They jumped off the top of a roof. Okay, this is presumably not so high. I guess the normal thing. Low roof, and the point is they jump from one thing to another. V'shivru es hakelim, mashalim nezek shalim. They landed on some nice, vase or something, and they smashed it as they jumped from one to another. You pay full damages. Okay, animal, you pay full damages on behalf of the animal. Why? Sounds at the moment like regular, right? It's regular movement of an animal, right? It's normal for a dog or a goat to jump from one place to another, from one roof to another, or from the top of one place, and therefore, it, as it lands on that vase and causes it's basically the same thing as your cow stepping on something as it's walking, right? Okay, shalom nezek shalom. Mipnesha hin muadin, right? And I think that's what it means. Mipnesha hin muadin is basically saying that, it's like regular damage. Rashi says that. Muadin likfots, it's normal to jump. Uvirashus hanizak ka'omar, you're talking about private domain. The tolda de regel he, right? This is a sideshow or a subcategory, I should say, of regel, the category of regel. Okay. Hakelev shenotal charor, and this is in our Mishnah, but we've quoted this earlier. Okay, we'd quoted this Mishnah in our Gemara earlier, but now this is the Mishnah itself. Hakelev shenot al charora, a dog who takes a some sort of, I don't know, I'm imagining like a pita bread, you know, like some sort of something which has been cooked on a fire. V'holach legodish v'ochel, and went over to where the grain is and started to eat it over there. A charora is this.
Must be an ember.
Correct, exactly. Something hot. But the point is, he didn't take it on purpose, right? It's attached to something else. He didn't pick this up and carry it over there intentionally. It went along as he was trying to eat. All he's doing is going over to the where the grain is to have his lunch. But the ember or this coal, the hidlik hagodish, it lights up all the grain all around. Al hacharora mishalim nezek shalim. On the piece of food, right? That's what I think the charora is. The is definitely a piece of food. But anyway, the point is, the thing he took, that then you pay full damages, right? Because your animal went and took a piece of food and ate it, right? So that's again mishalim smasha hizika, as we've seen. Shane, that's regular Shane damages. But one in the v'ala godish mishalim chatzin nezek. So the stuff that was burnt up, that's only chatzin nezek. Why? So that comes back to our discussion earlier when we talked about tsroros, right? Some sort of indirect damages, right? Tsroros, a reminder was the animal kicks out stones as it's walking along and it smashes something, so that's less direct. So over here, again, the same thing. It's the fact that it's less direct also means that you're going to be only paying half damages, going to be less liable. Okay, and again, yeah, I'm sure this is familiar. We remember that we discussed it a little bit earlier, but obviously the Gemara is going to get into more detail about it.
Go back again. I'm concerned about this sort of cut off of causation link. Now, though it's not a normal thing that a dog would do, the fact is, but for the fact he picked up his bit of bread or whatever and carried an ember with him, the grain wouldn't have caught fire.
It is normal. No, it's very normal to do. It's just less direct. No one's saying it's not normal.
I mean, is it, how less direct does it need to be if it's gone directly from where he took the food, carried the ember? I mean, that's not far removed, I would suggest. That's a direct consequence of picking that food up from the oven or wherever in the first place.
I mean, one wouldn't have happened to the other, but without the other. But that does not. I don't think that's what. Maybe direct is the wrong word. Then I don't know what the best English word would be.
Yeah, no.
But the point is that it's a separate. The damage that was, let's put it like this, the animal could have done the same action without that consequence. But then, when the animal eats the food, right, it's eating the food.
Correct.
You cannot eat the food without eating the food, right? And therefore, the consumption of the food is going to pay full damages.
Yeah.
Over here, you know, I'm making up numbers here, and it's not about the numbers. My point is, 9 times out of 10, when it takes the pita bread and goes and eats it, nothing else happens. But over here, this one time, you know, there happened to be something that was caught onto it, and that's what lit the fire. It's almost like an unlucky extra piece. I'm throwing words in here. I'm not trying to. I don't think the point is to justify it, but the point is, it's not the same thing. It's not a direct. I don't know what the word is, direct or indirect.
It might be that almost by definition, something that catches fire because
that will come to.
That by definition. You know, it's not like you took a blowtorch and directed it onto the thing that caught fire. It's going to be indirect.
So that we're going to come to. I'm pretty sure that Gemara is coming very soon, actually.
I think that it's because it's fire.
That's the next Gemara. I don't think it is.
No?
I was going to say, suppose maybe the animal hadn't because... taken something to eat. Suppose it just caught its leg on a stick that was hot and went
flicked
over to where the hay was and the hay caught fire. What are you going to say?
Flicked it up. It's tsroros. That's the same thing. But that's not fire. But that's nothing to do. But the same thing. But the same thing. The same thing would have been true if it would kick out a stone.
I mean, it's a long time ago, but how restricted is Ryan's and Fletcher and so on? You know, scabies, stains, holes,
noxious spots.
Yeah. I mean, to me, this is close enough to be a continuation or foreseeable continuation. I don't see this as indirect. If it was smouldering and then sort of a day later, the thing caught fire, or a couple of hours later.
Why does time delay make it less direct?
It does, because that's not that is a arguable, what's the word, severing of that?
No, because if I build a defective bridge, which falls down 30 years later, it was a defective bridge from the very beginning.
Yeah, I'm not sure that time delay makes a difference. But anyway, but that's not the discussion over here. Has nothing to do with time delay. The
direct or indirect, isn't it?
Yeah, the point is, this goes back right back to Thoreau's. This already is an established principle that we've had, that something that is less.
I know I put it last time there. I still think.
I mean, already we're only talking within. You, I think also just to be clear, and then I'll let you speak. A lot of the indirect things, we're not talking about human damages. Human damage, the level of damages expected by the person is always going to be higher, okay? We're talking about where it's your animal, okay? So where your animal is causing damage, then the indirect is going to be more significant, okay? If you yourself were to have taken the, if you steal someone's pita bread, and then the ember falls off, I don't remember, but I would assume then you would be fully liable, I'm pretty sure. I don't, but that's really Gemara's later on, when we're talking about human damages. Well, generally, the level of expectation there is much, much higher. It's a special dispensation. It seems to be a special dispensation. As we said before, Tzroros is potentially even a halacha on Moshe Mi-Sinai, right? We had, I think the Gemara referred to it as I can't remember what the phrase was, but anyway.
But the mission here is distinguishing between the cake and the damage to the grain.
Correct.
So we've got to understand what the difference there is.
Well, the cake is direct, and the damage to the grain is indirect.
Because I think it's because it's fire anyway.
But again, but why? Okay. Well, let's talk about it when it gets nearer. But I'll tell the reason I don't think it's fire is because even the initial, let's say the ember. Let's say it would have taken a stone.
Do you think you're forewarned that dogs who jump can cause embers to...
No, but the jumping is a separate thing. They're two separate cases. The jumping and the eating are two separate cases.
That is true. I've broken the vessel, now I'm eating
the... two different dogs, two different days.
I'm eating the produce and... Okay.
Right, the jumping, the dog that jumped across you for sure. But, the dog that jumped, right, and smashed something, and we've had these cases, the dog that jumped, smashed something, let's say something bounced off when it did that, right, and smashed something else, so that's what we talked about, right, that's the case of Tzoros, right, less direct thing, again, you'd be, half damages. Okay, let's see.
Just as a general point, though, it's also the case, because somebody asked me this, that actually... What we're dealing with here is only cases where people do submit to the authority of the Beis Din. So, actually, these are rules that apply between Shimon and Levi, but not necessarily between a Jew and a non-Jew.
Not necessarily, but again, a non-Jew. Let's say, in a country that is where the Beis Din is the authority. That might govern. It's not about Jew versus non-Jew, but you're right. Generally, most of the time, most of Jewish history, we have not been in areas where the laws of the Beis Din are the laws of the area. It's two people who say, now let's say in the UK, in the UK in 2021, 2023, whatever year we're in right now.
The
UK in 2023, when you have these discussions, it's usually two Jews who are saying, we will arrange together to go to a Beis Din and submit to their authority. But in principle, the rules are...
And do you think that also applies to what we were learning about the Rosh Hashanah and animal turning its head?
Yeah.
So the shopkeeper could be Shmuel, or it could be...
Correct. I mean, most of this stuff is going to be subject to what we call Dino de Malchus Adino, which is
the law of the land.
Correct, the law of the land, exactly, is going to override, it's going to override that. It's always better to, But again, there are certain laws which apply. I think what I'm trying to clarify is there are certain laws which do distinguish between Jew and non-Jew. A lot of these laws, it's not about distinguishing between Jew and non-Jew, it's just that the reality is that most of the time, Jews are the ones who are going to submit to the law of the Beis Din. And there's an expectation that you should do. If two things happen between, that's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, that again, if two Jews do end up in, again, whether it's accidental or intentional, discussions, debates, financial disputes, they should go in the first instance to a Beis Din. They should go in the first instance to a Beis Din. So I don't know. We've reached the end of the Mishnah. I mean, we could start the Gemara, but with it's 10:45 already. So let's start again next time with the Mishnah, and then we'll jump into the Gemara from there. Okay.